Broadcasting on all frequencies from the jungle of death, you're listening to Babes in the Woods.
Hello, welcome back to the jungle of death. This is Rachel, and I'm here with just Lindsay for right now.
It's a very special episode.
We're having kind of a little shortened, intense episode as a response to the Red Wedding, because I'm sure you're all very curious as to what we thought of it.
Some of you may have RSVP'd, no, but it's a situation where everyone has to come, regardless of their preferences.
Yeah, the Red Wedding waits for no one.
No, man.
let's start off with kind of, I think we're just mostly going to talk about our reactions and kind of what we think the implications are for the show. So, Lindsay, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, totally. I think it was another example of the ways in which HBO has made some very strategic tweaks to the text. So the Red Wedding opens. You maybe don't get the same sense of scope that you do in the books, but the whole Stark enclave arrives, and Walder Frey is his requisite level of creepy to the beautiful Talisa. Catelyn is put off, but not as put off as Rob, but she prevents him from making an ugly scene, and it seems like with the host gift, we're in the clear, right? Like, he's extended his hospitality, everything is going to be fine. Yeah, it's a law. It's a law in Westeros. And instead, nothing is fine, and Q, basically a series of awkward scenes leading up to Edmure wedding the cutest of the Fry girls. Is her name Rosamund? I don't care. Anyway, so everyone's sort of on edge, but after the wedding, it seems like the feelings of anxiety die off a little, and we have a lot of really beautiful, sort of poignant scenes where Talisa talks about teaching little Ned Stark to ride horses. Where Catelyn talks about how they didn't do the wedding ceremony at her wedding. There's, like, a lot of really wonderful, we see the ways in which this family is growing. There's a great scene where Rob wants to go over and rescue his mother. These are his words, which are later so poignant, from Roose Bolton. And Talisa says, your mother never needs to be rescued.
Yeah.
Which, unfortunately, is not so.
It's not true. But I do love that scene. I also really love the story about Ned not allowing the bedding ceremony, because it just makes you, I love that these little things that they're doing that make you love Ned Stark even more after his death.
Yeah, I know they've said that they're not going to bring him back for any flashback sequences, but HBO, if you listen to our podcast on the off chance, I think you should break that rule, because one, Sean Bean is so awesome, and two, I miss Ned Stark so much.
You know, though, I kind of agree with them on this, and here's what I'll say is that I feel like even though they don't have flashbacks, his presence is all over the series, which is kind of great. I love that he feels like somebody who, despite the fact that he died, like, his presence, you just feel him in every conversation, in every action that the Starks take. I really like that they've kept it's kind of like keeping his memory alive. Like, they really have done a good job of invoking that memory and of creating, of, like, almost filling in his personality even more after his death, which I think is really great.
I think that that is true. I would also say that if they actually make the prequel series that there's been much debate about on the internet, I won't necessarily need for there to be a flashback when Jon Snow's parentage is revealed.
Yes.
Which I think is the ultimate, like, it's just a scene I can't imagine without a Ned flashback in my own head.
Yeah, but that's true.
We'll see how they handle it. But anyway, long story short, the Red Wedding is aptly named because the entire Stark group, crew, whatever you want to call it, what's a group of Starks of three or more, they get the axe and the knife and a bunch of arrows in the back and a bunch of stabs in the fetus. So,
stabs in the fetus.
And we're left. Perhaps my favorite part of the entire episode was the merciless way in which we didn't get any closing music. The pure silence at the end that just leaves you sad and with feelings that you there is no escape, there is no reprieve. My favorite single moment of the Red Wedding is probably Catelyn swearing on her honor that she will kill Walder Frey's wife, and then in spite of the fact that it's not going to change anything, murdering Walder Frey's wife because she said she was going to.
Yeah.
I loved Catelyn Stark, and I loved her for keeping her word at that moment. What about you, Flumps?
I have to say, Michelle Fairley has made me love Catelyn Stark
so
much more than I ever did in the books.
Me too, I totally agree.
She's amazing, and her I mean, I think I talked about this in that post on the blog, but her reaction to Reigns of Castamere starting to play was so great, because I got chills. And it's like, I know what's happening. Like, I know what's happening. But the moment that music starts to play and you just see this look on her face, even when that guy, like, leaves and goes to shut the door, she has that moment of, like, that's not normal.
No, that's
what's
not right.
What's happening? And Roose Bolton being such an asshole.
Oh,
where he's
creepy,
like,
Roose
Bolton. Won't matter now.
But they're the perfect pair acting off one another. Like, they're the perfect nemesis heroine. Like, they're, like, two of my favorite actors when they have interactions together, because he is so good at that creepy downplay. And I've been reading a lot of reactions on the internet, a lot of analysis about how, just like in the books, if you go back and read about what you're reading, like, the bits of Roose Bolton you get, you can see the way he sets up this plan, like, from book one. Just like that, if you go back and you watch from season one, you can get, like, the bits of Roose Bolton's plan forming, and, like, the point at which during when he's holding Jaime hostage, when he makes the pact with the Lannisters, that in turn, you know, like, he's telling that story, like, everyone's telling their wedding stories at the Red Wedding, which is beautifully authentic and not something you get in the books, but, like, just the way people talk about their own romantic experiences at weddings. So, you know, like, Catelyn's told her story about Ned not letting the wedding ceremony occur because he'll break someone's straw. And Bolton goes, well, I just got a fat wife from Walder Frey. He said he'd pay me her weight in gold. And it's another moment where you see the anxiety flicker across Catelyn's face. But she can't quite place her sense of foreboding. And she feels that they're safe again because, one, it's a wedding. And who the fuck does this during a wedding? And two, hospitality gift. Like, they are protected under the laws of the land. It's funny, I was talking about it with my boss, who's a big, she's a big fan of the show, and we were talking about ownage, actually, because I've read a lot of complaints that now that Robb Stark is gone, there's not going to be anyone around to own Lannisters, and I would say, hello, Daenerys dragons. But I would also say, like, if you look at it from the reverse, this is what my boss pointed out, is that Tywin is doing nothing but owning people. Nonstop, like, and he hasn't broken the host laws. He's done nothing wrong. He's basically gotten this, like, country bumpkin asshole, like, little lord to do it for him, and it's brilliant. It's conniving. Like, it's just another example of Tywin's cruel mercenary brilliance.
Exactly, and one of my favorite parts of that book is when they basically, and I'm paraphrasing here, but somebody's talking to Tywin about it, and he's like, yeah, even I wouldn't have done that shit. Like, there's, like, this edge, like, where he's like, I found a guy who would do it for me, but I was kind of shocked that he would do it for me, because, let's be honest, who would break their word like that? Yeah. Even he's kind of like, I love that there's a sense, like, the Freys have outcast themselves as a result of this action.
It's in the books, I was rereading the scene, because I was interested. In the books, in the scene where Walder brings out all of his daughters for Robb Stark's apology, half of the daughters have Northern or Riverlands-inspired names. And then the other half of the daughters all have Lannister-inspired names. There's a Tyta, there's a Cersei, and you just get this sense of a man who has no true allegiances. Like, even in that moment, there's that.
Well, and there's also this kind of sense that I really like. I do wish they kind of had this, but I just remember the moment when I was reading in the Red Wedding and wrote, is it Rosamund or maybe it's either Rosalind or it's Rosamund.
Yeah, exactly. Hang on, I'll look it up.
But, she's crying.
Yes.
Which I kind of wish they'd had was a little bit of her trepidation. But I do also like the idea that, what's interesting is that Edmure and her really do seem to love one another, which is kind of weird. Like, he really seems to care about her. And so it's really strange the way that...
It's Rosalind.
Is it Rosalind?
Yeah, totally.
It's really interesting. I mean, I think it's interesting that they've set that up really well on the show. Yeah. But I do kind of wish we'd had a little bit of the her crying in the sense, like, that everyone knew what was going to happen except for the Starks.
Yeah.
The sense, like, everyone was in on it. She knew she was going to be saved. I do like that they didn't have it be the mentally... handicapped Jester, which was really hard to come back from with Catelyn.
Doesn't she kill a grandpa? Or, like, grandson, too?
That's who she kills, is this grandson is a Jester for Walder Frey, but
he's
mentally handicapped.
Ugh.
And so it's, like, really awful, and there's this huge sense of just, like, because you see it also with Shireen, is that her name?
Yeah.
Stannis' daughter.
Yeah.
Her, her friend. I can't remember his name now in the books.
Oh, shoot. It's like that something clown. Face. Yeah.
Yeah, the clown that she has. This sense that if Patch you're face. Mentally handicapped, yeah, that you are, you're just fucked. Somebody's going to just kill you and use you as a hostage. Or, like, you're going to be a jester for the rest of your life. And it's just, like, this awful. There's enough going on in this world. Do we really need to see?
I also liked it because the whole episode, part of the reason it felt like such a gut punch to me as a woman and a feminist, was the ways in which, like, women are treated as interchangeable objects throughout. And it's really, like, driving home this point that you're essentially powerless. Like, even in the scene where, like, Caitlin attempts to rescue her son, like, in an awesome, like, reversal of roles. Yeah. Like, even then, she's told that, like, she is worth nothing and that mm-hmm. woman is worth nothing. And it's horrible. And I really like it as a setup for the eventual Stoneheart retribution. The only reason, in some ways, I like the killing of the jester grandson a little more is because Frey is so smug with all of his descendants. And ultimately, Stoneheart's plan to, like, deprive him of that and leave him alone and, like, take away this what is essentially a security blanket of progeny is really satisfying. But I'm sure we'll get that in another way. And the sad hopelessness of women as a theme of the episode was very effective.
Well, and I think, especially with Talisa, like, I still go back and forth on what they did with that one, just not in terms of what they did, but in terms of how they did it. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, like, it's hard for me to fight the fact that it was so effective. Like, it was so effective in making me stop and pay attention, because I was already kind of, I mean, I was dreading it, and I wasn't quite smug in the way a lot of my friends were that I knew.
Yeah.
But I still had, like, this moment where I was kind of like, I was just, like, waiting for it the whole episode. Like, that's what I was waiting for. Like, I knew it was coming. I was kind of paying attention to everything else, but it wasn't really. And then, like, that was the moment that shocked me. And I was like, oh no. Oh, okay. You're gonna keep doing that. I really didn't want to see this.
No. It's dreadful. And I like, what I like about what the show did that George didn't accomplish is that you never, ever care about Jane Westerling. Like, you do not give a shit. The only thing you do give a shit about, if you've read the books, is maybe she's pregnant with Rob's, like, the heir to the throne or whatever. You don't give a shit. You come to, like, Talisa is an interesting, a strong, and an effective character. She is able on the battlefield. Mm-hmm. You respect her abilities. And her death, even if she was, like, I've seen a lot of really interesting analysis calling her a Lannister honey pot or a Lannister spy. Which I think is very interesting. Even if she was, you know that she didn't deserve that fate, and perhaps she deserved it even less if Tywin was willing to sacrifice her in that way. Yeah. So I think, I mean, it's just, you lose three major characters of the season, which mm-hmm. even though you get the scope of the gore a lot more in the books, like with the heads of all of these northern houses being mm-hmm. killed, you know, like the major, like, commanders in the military, mm-hmm. I think it's a lot more, it hurts more in your heart because these are three characters that you've come to care about a lot more. I never really, and I will say this outright, never really cared for Rob in the books.
Not he just always seemed
like
books,
a dweeb to me, a dweeb.
Cyclops.
Yeah, exactly. Leonardo.
Leonardo Turtle. Like, he was just kind of like, oh, God, you're that guy.
And, you know, I knew that George, like, I appreciated in the books when I was reading it that George was trying to subvert the idea that you go from Ned to Ned's son in a revenge plot. Like, it's the clear, like, hero's path that you've come to expect in fantasy literature. And so I appreciated mm-hmm. him cutting it short. In the show, I was devastated by Rob's death in a way that I was never, like, upset by it in the books.
The way he said the word mother was just awful. Like, I'm like gonna start crying now when I think about it. But, like, literally, because there is such, like, a despair in it, and like kind of almost like a giving up in that moment of, like, kind of like, just let it go. Like, I'm just gonna die and it's gonna be fine.
Yeah, like, it's so horrible.
It's so awful. And what did you think? I was gonna ask you about this, but what did you think about the change that they've made in the wording of Bruce Bolton's last words to Rob, which granted, they changed it a couple episodes back. They had Jaime say, give Rob Stark the Lannister's regards or something like that.
Yeah.
He doesn't say give him my regards. He says give him, say the Lannisters give their regards. Okay, well, before we get into, actually, we'll come back and we'll talk about the whole change in what Jaime Lannister said and what Rhys Bolton said. And we have a special guest joining us after this break. So we'll see you guys in a little bit.
So excited!
So I'm here with Lindsay.
Yeah, I've been here.
She's been here. But we also have our special guest. Look who is here to join us. Say hello, special guest.
It's me. I'm back.
Yay!
He's back.
Three reactions are better than two.
Yes.
I feel like the Targaryens agree.
Yeah.
Aww. We're the three heads of the dragon, you guys. Spoiler.
Awesome.
Can't wait. So, I'll Nyssa. Be more
active.
This is me being a dragon, right?
So, Nyssa, just to kind of catch you up, we were just about to start discussing from this past episode, from Reigns of Castamere in Game of Thrones, the kind of changes they made between what Rhys Bolton says in the book versus what he says in the show when he's stabby with, you know, Robb Stark.
What a dick!
Lannister in particular.
Yeah, so he, on the show, to kind of recap, on the show, when Jaime Lannister leaves Rhys Bolton's care, he says, tell Robb Stark the Lannisters send their regards. And when Rhys Bolton says it to Robb, he also says the Lannisters send their regards. In the book, it is Jaime Lannister sends his regards. I think it's a good choice, definitely, because it's less confusing for viewers who haven't read the books.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think that would have been really already, I think I said this to you guys, but the AV Club already had comments about how already underneath where people were like, Jaime said that two episodes ago. Oh my God, Jaime's totally in on it. And other people were like, no, he's not in on it. It's just a coincidence.
He's a good guy like, now.
This is already starting. And they didn't even say Jaime Lannister sends his regards.
It's kind of a non sequitur, but my favorite set of AV Club comments on this one from the newbies post were totally from some guy that wants the ending to be Bran being a dragon riding wizard king.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah.
That's probably not impossible at this stage.
I think it sounds awesome.
Yeah. Well, I love.
He is supposed to be the flying wolf, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and there are a couple of people who are actually on board with the theory that Sansa will be the one to rule.
She's the one that's being trained for it. How about that? Like being Littlefinger's
protege. Let's set her on fire instead. Whoops.
Here's my thing: is like if Sansa is ever able to shake her kind of
being stupid,
but like the thing is like. Yeah, she could grow some balls and some intelligence, which I think they're kind of setting her up to possibly
do. They are making her
so
much better on the show.
Yeah.
Then they're also, they're putting her through, she gets put through so much. There's no way that any living person couldn't come out of that having learned something.
Right.
I mean, it's going to be hard with Sansa because it seems to take a very long time for her to learn things.
Right? Like, we got to slog through a whole lot of bullshit.
Well, but let's talk about the Baelish method
a little
bit.
Like the song.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a Baelish method where when you screw up, you have to marry a dwarf. Like, let's talk about, like, punitive education. Like, it's a rough ride. Like, I can't imagine that anyone could, like, the thing is, like, Sansa's learning a lot about composure. And, like, there's the scene where she's, like, praying with the girls. Like, people are really into the scene where, like, Sansa prays with the women in the back of the keep during the Blackwater and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I think she has, like, for instance, Arya, my favorite.
Which is interesting, because I just reread that part, and, like, that she doesn't do that.
Oh.
The ladies who want to pray go away.
Oh.
To the set.
Well, but anyway, in this show, I just mean, like, they're making her more, you know, like.
They are making her a lot better.
Anyway, but, like, Arya, who is my favorite psychopathic killer Stark,
yeah.
Like, my favorite young assassin in training, like, she is not destined for the throne.
No,
I'm going to throw that out there. And honestly.
She could be in the Kingsguard.
I would like that. Honestly, at this point, Sansa is growing on me. I don't have a problem with Sansa in the same way I used to in the books, and I don't think anyone is happy on the Iron Throne is the other part of this, so I don't begrudge Sansa the seat, if that makes any sense. But not to get too much into speculation.
Was it heavy as the is it heavy as the heart or heavy as the
head?
I can't remember.
Heavy as the head that wears the crown.
Is that what you're thinking of?
Yeah, but there's something about the Iron Throne that they say as well at some point.
Well, it does, like, there's a whole lot about, you know, you can't sit easy on it. It's not.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. That's what I'm thinking of.
Or, as we saw,
I'm combining two, one real phrase and one made up phrase.
And as we learned from,
like, and there's all that stuff about, like, how Aerys' hands were always cut and bloody because
King Scab
was always biting him. Like,
yeah.
But I really liked the part when we saw in the previews. It's part of why I'm so excited for tonight's episode, where Joffrey's like, "I'm the king," and Tywin's like, "You think having a crown makes you a king?"
Right. Yeah,
I don't think so.
I love how Tywin can just say shit like that.
I love Tywin, and I'm gonna be so sad to lose him at some point.
I'm interested. They're really gonna have to. I'm glad they have another season to make him seem like a villain before, you know, what happens.
So everyone's like, "Wow, you're kind of like." I don't know the Clint Eastwood of this show.
No shit.
Everyone
that is
sort
100%
of recognizes
true.
That you're awful, but like we love you.
And he gets shit done. Like he's good at his job. Like that's what you respect about him.
That's the thing is like it's hard to. He's such an efficient Lannister. Like he really is the best Lannister when it comes to efficiency and like getting shit done. Like
he's clearly the reason Casterly Rock has all the money and all the power.
Like, yeah, and it's like well, and I mean you have to remember that Reigns of Castamere is
Tywin.
Because of Tywin. Not only is it the Lannister
his wife
song.
Didn't have as many jewels, so he fucked their shit up.
Well, also not only is it the Lannister song, it's literally like Tywin Lannister song.
Yeah.
And because
like he's mentioned in all the descriptions of why that's a thing.
But like the other thing about it is, and I was just like reading up on this because I'd forgotten, Tywin's dad was a fuck up that like messed up their whole reputation. And like people didn't respect them or fear them. So it got to the point where people weren't paying back their debts to the Lannisters. So it's basically Tywin who restored the reputation of the entire family.
Tywin fixed shit, and that's why he takes it so hard that, like, his children aren't as awesome as he is.
Well, it's interesting, because really, it's kind of like all of his children, what I really liked, was I had a friend who described it this way, which is, I may have mentioned this in the last podcast, I can't remember, but how she was telling her brother about when he was reading the books, she was like, be prepared to fall in love with the Lannisters one by one. And he was like... But it's true, because even though, and I haven't gotten to this point yet, so
there's at
spoiler
least one
alert.
That will never happen before.
Well,
we
no, but with Cersei, the way she put it, which I think is true, which is with, I haven't gotten to this point, but I know that it happens. Cersei and her kind of trial, that you may
which
not
she brings
love her,
totally
but
on
you,
herself.
You respect the crap out of her for that moment. No? That's what she was saying.
I don't think at all, no, because she's whining the whole time, and they, like, cut off her hair, and then she's just naked, and then they make her walk through the streets, and everyone's, like, throwing fruit at her, and, like, there's a point at which something heavy hits her head. Like, the walk of shame, like, she deserves it, and you hope that she's going to come out of it with a changed worldview, but I don't believe it for a second. Like, I really, like, Cersei is, to me, like...
Nothing ever changes her
mind. She's weird, and she's paranoid. Like, the whole Maggie the Frog, like, prophecy that causes her to hate Tyrion regardless of what he does. Like, to me, she's the, like, she's an interesting character. She's three-dimensional in ways I didn't expect when I first started reading the series and when I first started watching the show. Certainly, Lena Headey makes her seem more intelligent, which we've all talked about previously.
Yeah.
But, no, I just, I don't think Cersei's a redeemable character at this point. But, I mean, like, if anyone could do it, it's David Benioff and his crack team of ninjas.
I mean, it's true. Like, on the show, there's still hope for her. But
well, I mean, even more so than in the books, they've made Jaime Lannister a really great. And I mean, I think a lot of this goes to Nikolaj Coster-Waldau.
He's such a babe. He's like history's greatest babe.
Right?
I would like to ride
also,
that babe all the way to
I would
Maid
like
Town.
To point out that I've been a fan of his since New Amsterdam.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Well, my big thing is like he was one of those people who, and when I talk about kind of like the long game with these actors that I kind of think might, I hope, I'm crossing my fingers is happening with Kit Harington because they don't have him, they don't give him much to do. So I think that's why maybe he doesn't
well,
come across as.
Half of his scenes being annoyed with Ygritte.
Yeah. But like there's a scene that was him, this is my one Kit Harington thing that I'll say. The scene where he's telling her, you're going to die. You always die because the wildlings never succeed in taking the wall.
Right.
And he, like, says that to her. That scene, like, his acting in that scene, I was like, wait a minute, hold on. I feel like you're just holding something back this whole time, and that you just let a little bit out, which is good, because maybe that'll keep coming out. Yeah. But anyway, with Jamie, I feel like in the beginning, I had this moment where I was like, he's really good at being cocksure, and he's really pretty to look at. I hope he can do the other scenes well. And then he, not only does he nail them, but he just nails them in such a way that you're like, Poppy.
Right?
Poppy, call me a puppy. I know you just killed a lot of people and you threw an 8-year-old out the window, but Poppy.
He's perfect. He's the most perfect casting on the show. And, like, that's saying a lot because there's a lot of excellent casting. But, yeah,
there's
like.
Really no one who's terrible on the show. Yeah. Like,
Michelle Fairley has just, that scene killed me. Killed me, and her her acting is just she's brilliant, and her scream like terrified
so
me.
So perfect, I loved it.
I actually thought of you when she did that. I was like, Flumpy loves a raw scream.
I also love a raw scream, but not as much as Flumpy. I would say this about it because I'm really, you know, like when the casting initially came out and it was supposed to be Jennifer Eale from Pride and Prejudice. I was really excited that they did an episode with her, Nyssa, and apparently the chemistry just didn't work. Like, she just wasn't for the role. So then they
Plus
put
she
in
she looks like a Stark instead of a Tully.
Yeah. And so I was really like, I was ready to like be like, who's this lady? Like, what's the deal with her? Like, she's no
she's
Lizzie Bennet. And so then I was really stunned by how much I liked her. And she's made me love Catelyn Stark, which is like
never could have happened.
It's huge for me. It's in. Yeah. I can't even begin to tell you guys. Like, I loved her. I loved that scene where she was making that weird old god's wreath a few weeks ago. Like,
that was a great scene.
She's got some game, and I really, really, really like it.
I also really like. I think that they did a really good job, and I'll say this kind of in an R.I.P. for Catelyn. But they did. No matter what, Catelyn itself is not herself is not coming back. But her. The way that they put that scene, like her being mean to Jon Snow, the way that they inserted that after we'd already kind of had her as a character we liked, I think is smart.
Yes.
Because it means that you can sympathize with her a lot more than you can in the beginning of the books when you see her being rude to Jon Snow.
Right, when she's just a whore for, like, no reason.
Yeah.
Well, and it's like she's so horrible to him, and the problem is, like, Jon Snow you like immediately in the books.
Right.
Like,
yep.
There's just, you immediately take to him. You
right,
just,
so you're always on his side against her.
Yes.
Yeah, and so it's hard for you to ever like her as a result because he's just so, she treats him like shit.
Yeah.
So I really love the way that they've done that, where they put that in there so that you can still be disappointed in her for that moment and yet see her as a person who would have this kind of conflict and would have this kind of rage and righteous energy inside of her.
And a tremendous amount of pride. You know, that has been hurt. And the way they portrayed it on the show is so much more sympathetic to me because I certainly understand, like, when you feel proud and you feel your pride has been injured. Like, you know? And so that makes it a lot more palatable. And I'm really excited because with the coming Lady Stoneheart stuff, like, I think she's an actress that can hold up to, like, what is probably going to be a voiceless role because of...
Yeah, I would assume they're not going to do the gurgling thing because that would be laughable on screen.
Yeah,
I hope
not. Yeah.
And so I'm very interested because she has such strong features and such strong, like, she's very good at the facial aspect of acting.
Well, we know what she can do with just a face, like, after this episode.
Right, yeah.
That's the other thing. I'm concerned about, like, I think we're going to go into this episode. I think it's going to be a cold drop. And I think we see, like, the Grey Wind's head on Rob's body. And, like,
I was really hoping
we would just hear that as, like, rumors.
I think we're going to see it.
No, I think we're going to see it. I think they have to show it to us because that's such an iconic image.
Skipping Danny's vision before, like.
But I think
they couldn't do it because, no, we didn't see it in the vision. We see it in the vision in the book.
Like, we didn't do it before.
But I think they skipped it before because if you see it, you're going to know what happens.
Yeah, that's my feeling,
too. He's not going to make it because she doesn't know what Robb Stark looks like in the book.
Well, right, but, like, he doesn't have a head, so what he looks like is sort of immaterial.
I know, but I feel like you would know what that implies.
You would know
it's too much foreshadowing.
You know his wolf, like, and, like...
Like, two seasons before... Well, I mean, except people keep getting confused about the wolves. Like, if you read the comments and episode reactions, people are like, what's that? Like, the dire wolves that are kind of a huge deal? Like...
I feel like I get where they were.
I mean, they could have done it, especially like two seasons before this happens. Like,
but it's not two seasons though. It was the season finale of last year. Like, I just
her visions?
That's
were they?
Yeah, her visions were the season finale of last year.
No, they were season finale of season one. Like,
no, they weren't. Season finale of season one
was
the dragons.
You're right, because it's the warlocks.
She was supposed to lose her hair and she never did.
Yeah, and I think it's a good choice, mostly because, again, in the books, there's a sense of mystery and there's a sense of things shifting, so you're not quite sure of what you're reading.
Right.
Whereas, and it only becomes clear in retrospect, I feel like. Whereas this would have been very plain, and I feel like there's very little you could have done to disguise what that meant. Whereas this is, you know...
And then we wouldn't have gotten all those people like, oh, Rob Stark, he was my favorite.
Oh, yeah. We were talking about how, because poor of the show, suckers. He kind of is your favorite, but in the books, you just can't stand him.
Yeah.
But in the show, Richard Madden just makes him so great.
Yes.
I mean, he's better. I still don't like him that much.
Oh, really Nyssa, like you contrarian.
What?
Mad about the vision not having the wolf's head, and now they're going to put the wolf's head back on.
It doesn't make me mad.
Poor thing.
But I think they will, to kind of go into tonight's episode, I think they will show,
I think that they're quintessential images of the books.
Of the book, yeah.
Like, and I think we need the desecration. I think it takes it to another level where it's beyond horrifying. Like, I think it helps
that actually happens. Like,
we add it to the Tywin as a villain pile, though. Like, because we really need to turn Tywin into a villain if we're going to have Tyrion do his thing next season.
I think that they've already shown through the fetus stabbing that they're really not afraid to go there.
No.
I mean, that's true.
I think that would be a really good
I liked it, and it was so manipulative. And I seldom like moves on television that are so blatantly manipulative.
Right,
like so much about, and I liked it. Like,
but
I liked it. I liked it a bunch.
Also, it made
sense. I thought it was funny that it, like, seemed stuck in there just to be like, ha ha, you knew this whole thing was coming, but you didn't see this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ha ha, all of you smirking, I read the books people.
Yeah.
It works also to characterize Walder Frey, because you definitely would never suspect. Walder Frey is not subtle.
No.
Like, he's very clearly being like, you will not have heirs. Like, there's nothing subtle about it. Like, even though just killing her would have killed the baby.
Right. Like, no, not good enough.
No.
It's just so tragic. Like, and I don't know.
It's awful.
Like, they're so good at the little interpersonal stuff that you can't get in George R. R. Martin's writing. Like, those glances that Talisa and Rob give each other, like, during the wedding ceremony. Like, you like their love so much more than you ever like his stupid Jane Westerling fuck-up of doom.
Yeah.
True story.
So.
Well, with that.
She's a little smug, though.
Yes.
I wasn't sorry to see her go.
No, but...
Oh, I was sorry to see her go, but I also associate her with The Hour now, too, so I love that actress. and on that note, we should probably wrap it up, because I think we've probably said all we can say about the Red Wedding. We've made some predictions about this season finale.
We have.
We'll have a reaction episode up also for the season finale, guys. It'll be kind of a short, intense... I probably won't be there for that one, because I will be out of the country. I'm gonna go have my European vacation. Who knows? I know this sounds terrible, but I have these moments where I'm like, maybe I'll see one of those actors somewhere. which would be awesome.
You have to be an extra creeper about it if that happens.
Also, I will say this is my last closing story about Michelle Fairley, which is that I was watching all of the Catherine Tate Show on Netflix this week while I was packing, and she's in an episode, and I literally had a moment where I was like, Catelyn, and she's playing like a kind of an East End, in the ghetto kind of mother. It's really great. It's kind of amazing. Not East End. I don't know why I was saying East End. I'm pretty sure she's supposed to be in like Ireland. But it's really great. And, you just have to see it. It's pretty fantastic. So I think it's like the second season of the Catherine Tate Show. It was a really great kind of saying goodbye to Catelyn Stark.
I want to interject to say that this is the most flumpy send-off of all time. Like, you're recommending some obscure British television program before you leave us to go to Britain, and you're like, take care, ta-ta, lorries, lifts, and flats.
As you do hair mustache.
Well, that's what you gotta do.
That's what you gotta do. It's required. So if for some reason I get kicked out of the country, guys, I'll let you know. I'll come back with many a story, and I leave you in the very capable hands of Nyssa and Lindsay, who will be Nyssa and Lindsay.
together. Lindsay
and Nyssa, who will kind of give a very good reaction, I'm sure, to.
I'm sure we're going to have reactions. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, I'm sure,
that's true. Sure.
I'll probably post a little something on the blog to kind of give you guys my two cents as well.
You'd better.
Oh, I will. all right, well, have a lovely week, podcast listeners, and we'll be back in just a little while. All right, safe travels out of the jungle of death.
Bye.
Say goodbye, ladies.
Bye.
Bye.